everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom is engineering and producing our show on the other side of the glass in the Bustos Media's studios. And of course, the Buckmaster Show is in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio for this Wednesday midweek edition, February 17th, 2021. We are now 11 months into the COVID pandemic. I kind of mark St. Patrick's Day as the official start in 2020, and that was St. Patrick's Day is March 17th, so we're coming up on that one-year anniversary. We're an 11th year on the radio here on 1030, Tucson's Voice for Trusted News Talk. We have our worldwide live listening, trying to make it very easy for you. Anywhere in the world, you can hear the program. If you're on a computer, you just go to buckmastershow.com or kvoi.com. The Buckmaster Show live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Before we go to Rex Scott, my heart goes out, Tom Fairbanks, to the millions of people in Texas without power, without water. It's just unbelievable what's going on there. I read one report, a family in Houston breaking up their furniture for firewood. I mean, it's just hard to believe.
There have been instances of people going, lots of people apparently have been sitting in their cars with the engines running. There have been some that have been doing it in their garage, and as a result, they've died from carbon monoxide poisoning.
Wow.
So that, and my daughter and my son live in Keller.
Yeah.
And they have had to fill their bathtubs with water because the water pressure is getting so low, and they're having a problem with water.
Yeah, tough time.
Frozen pipes.
It is a what's being called a storm of a generation, and we're going to talk about the weather implications of that tomorrow with our climate scientist, Zach Guido, one of two dozen regular contributors, UA climate scientist, Dr. Zach Guido. But now let's go and begin our conversation with Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott, Democrat representing the first Pima County Supervisorial District. Supervisor Scott, how are you?
Bill, I'm doing fine. Thanks so much for this time with you and Tom and your listeners.
Well, congratulations. As a longtime educator, one item that had been at the top of your agenda, you ran on the idea of bringing early education to low-income preschoolers by a vote of 4-1. The Pima County Board of Supervisors decided to allocate $10 million of the upcoming fiscal year budget to fund early childhood education. You've got to be very pleased, Supervisor Scott.
Very pleased indeed, and very grateful to my colleagues for the discussion that we had yesterday and the decision that was reached. It is only a first step, however. This amount of money that we're putting into next year's budget is only going to help right around 1,000 kids. We are going to need to make a multi-year commitment, not just as a county, but as a collaborative effort involving the county, the other jurisdictions, and our partners in the private and charitable sectors, if we're really going to meet our ultimate goal, which is extending this opportunity to every 3-, 4-, and 5-year-old in this county whose family wants them to have a preschool education. That has to be the ultimate goal, but yesterday was an important first step in getting there.
If the budget, is there an if with this approval yesterday in the budget process, which is coming up, the fiscal year process, could this go by the wayside if the budget is not what it needs to be or in the red?
I'm not concerned about that, Bill, for two reasons, and I touched on both of them yesterday during the meeting. First of all, we are hearing that the two houses of the United States Congress will very likely approve the next COVID relief bill by the middle of March. And there should be substantial assistance for local and state governments in that bill. Secondly, back in late December, the lame duck Congress passed what was known as the Consolidated Appropriations Bill. And the state of Arizona was given over $400 million to help with the cost of COVID testing and over $60 million for the cost of vaccinations. And we granted are frustrated that we are still waiting for the governor and his administration to begin the disbursement of those funds to all 15 of the counties, not just ours, but we know that that money is coming. So that will help with the current fiscal year, and then what should be happening in March will help not only with the current fiscal year, but also ensure that we don't have any long-term fiscal problems that should hinder next year's budget unnecessarily.
The loan supervisor, the lone Republican on the board, Steve Christie, said Steve said flat out, we just cannot afford this. What is your reaction to Supervisor Christie, who is very critical of this plan?
Well, obviously, I disagree with him, but I respect the premise of his argument because he had other priorities that he thought deserved greater attention. But one of the things that Supervisor Christie frequently points out is that all of his colleagues on the board need to consider the business perspective that he brings after so many years as a successful businessman. I would encourage him to consider the fact that the Tucson Metro Chamber and the Southern Arizona Leadership Council, which are two pro-business groups in our area, have both endorsed the county taking a leadership role in quality early childhood education. And I'd also encourage him to look at the other cities and counties around the country that have taken steps to support early childhood education in their areas and the strong partnerships that they have formed with the private sectors in their areas.
How will the families, how will they determine, you and the board, determine who will be eligible for this funding?
Well, we set the standard, which is that the families that are eligible need to have an income that is 200% of the federal poverty level or below that. And then we will have to work on a lottery system of some sort, I would imagine, to determine the 1,000 families that will get these initial scholarships. And we'll be working not only with groups like the Preschool Promise, which is a multi-partner organization that has been supporting the cause of early childhood education for a long time, but we'll also be working in partnership with the early childhood providers in our area, which include not just private preschools, but also the school districts that have preschools within their infrastructure.
The research on early childhood education, on brain development, does this in effect prepare a young person for kindergarten to be kindergarten ready?
Absolutely. The brain development in kindergarten research is, kindergarten readiness research is very clear in terms of the impact that preschool can have on kids. And I come to that conclusion not only from the research that I've been able to look at, but also because I am married to an early childhood teacher. My wife has an early childhood degree. She has taught kindergarten, first and second grade. And like many teachers of her experience, she will tell you she can determine within the first day of having kids in her classroom which students have had the benefit of preschool and which haven't. And that's why this is such a strong anti-poverty measure, because the families that can afford to send their child to preschool have an advantage that those who can't afford that benefit simply don't have. That is just another example of where the great change agent effect of education is being deprived. There are families that are being deprived of having that change agent in their lives, and we just shouldn't be okay with that. if we want the best for all of our kids.
We're speaking with Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott, Democrat from District Number 1. Before we take the break, this would affect, you said, how many, just really a very small portion. What is the big picture of folks that could be eligible for this, Rex Scott?
Well, right now there are right around 25,000 3- and 4-year-olds. We expanded it to 5-year-olds who might be starting kindergarten later than the norm yesterday. And around 20% of those kids are currently enrolled in preschool. The actual number of kids whose families meet the income level, I am not sure of that figure right now. But I do know that what we did yesterday is going to help right around 1,000 kids. The ultimate number that may be helped by this is dependent not just on the income level, but whether or not their families want this opportunity for their child.
We will continue our conversation with Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott after we take a break. But before we go to the recorded messages, which I hope you will listen to very carefully, because those messages are people who believe in this program and make the program possible. Right now, though, the message I'm going to give you here live on the radio is, please support Steve, the owner and chief baker up at Mona's Danish Bakery. It's not hard to do to support someone that has such a really quality product like the Danish Kringle that they beautifully bake each day. Northeast Corner, Swan and Sunrise, I've been talking very openly about my favorites. The Blueberry Muffin, a new favorite, emerged over the weekend. A giant-headed chocolate chip cookie muffin, and it was absolutely delicious. And, of course, I'm into cinnamon rolls. And I guess I've been talking a lot about cinnamon rolls because when we went into the bakery on Sunday, guess what? They were completely out of them. So I didn't get my cinnamon roll, but I'm glad others did. And I guess they're hearing the message right here on the radio. Mona'sDanishBakery.com is their website. You can call ahead or look at the website and order right there and then go pick up your bakery goods. We'll be back with Rex Scott. It's Buckmaster in the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios. Be right back.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than 2 decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD. A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Jeanette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
If it can't be grown, then it must be mined. Cause without minerals, you never find your phones, your cars, your solar panels, or your smart TVs with your favorite channels. Hospitals, schools, and public facilities result from mining's vast abilities. Dividends, taxes, and high-paid employment come from mining for your enjoyment. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at VeroAmorePizza.com.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. I'm Bill Buckmaster. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Our live line is courtesy of Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We thank them for their support of the Buckmaster Show. Let's go back now on the live line to Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott. Mr. Scott, representing the first Pima County Supervisorial District. He is a Democrat, and he was successful in his in championing getting some early childhood education put forward here in Pima County. Let's switch gears. The Board of Supervisors decided to change direction, Supervisor Scott, and rescind the enhanced eviction protections. Why was that done?
Well, Bill, there was a vigorous discussion by the board back on February 2nd and another one yesterday about a proposal from my colleague in District 2, Supervisor Hines, to extend the moratorium on evictions that has been put in place by the federal government to include virtually all evictions within Pima County. And what he brought to us was some data that he had gotten primarily from the constables who said that there had been an increased number of evictions for what's known as material breach of contract. And Supervisor Hines felt that there were examples of landlords who were trying to get around the federal moratorium by evicting for those material breaches of contract. Speaking solely for myself, I wish that I had gone along with a motion that was made by Supervisor Christie back on February 2nd to extend this item to March 2nd so that we could hear from everybody who had an interest in an input to share about this issue. I didn't take that step, neither did all of my colleagues except for Supervisor Christie, but yesterday, based not only on our own reconsideration, but also on input that we'd gotten from various community members, we did take that action by a 3-2 vote with Supervisors Christie, Bronson, and myself voting to reconsider and rescind the item until March 2nd. And we were told by Mr. Huckleberry that we would have staff data on evictions to consider that day, and I'm certain that we will also have greater input from all of our community members who have input into this issue. Honestly, it was because we did not take into account sufficient community input when we made the original decision. And speaking just for myself, I regret that.
So you think you should have just postponed it to March, early March? when Supervisor Christie brought this up a couple of weeks ago.
Yes, and I said that yesterday.
All right, let's again switch gears. How are we doing? The frustration level is high in the community about getting vaccine into people's arms. What's your feeling on this? Where are we in the process?
Well, I know that we're dealing with a national vaccine shortage, and I'm very pleased to see that President Biden has made that job number one in terms of the efforts of his administration to use components under his authority, like the Defense Production Act, to increase vaccine production so that we can get more to the states. So I realize that part of the issue that we're dealing with is a national shortage that I'm confident is going to be addressed over time. But within the state of Arizona, it's important to remember that counties by statute are the local public health authorities. And counties have the primary responsibility for administering vaccines. And we have an infrastructure in place in Pima County that would allow us, if we were given sufficient vaccine, to immunize as many as 8,000 to 10,000 people a day. We have that capacity right now. We've never gotten more than 29,000 doses a week from the state. And our allotment is down right now to, I think, right around 16,000. And that's because the state takes off the top of the amount of vaccine that they get, the allocations that they give to the two state pods in Glendale and Tempe, and they have decided that they are taking the allotment that they will give to the new state pod on the University of Arizona campus out of the Pima County allotment. That is despite the fact that both President Robbins of the University of Arizona and, of course, our health department has prevailed upon the state not to do that. So it just seems to me that the role of counties had been respected and supported from the beginning, we would be able to immunize a lot more people than we are right now. And I should point out, Bill, I am the county's representative to the County Supervisors Association, and we meet weekly via Zoom, of course. And I hear from the supervisors in all the other counties that they are frustrated not just with the vaccine allotment situation from the state, but also frustrated, as I mentioned earlier in our call, the fact that the state has sat on that money that was passed by Congress back in late December and has not dispersed it to any of the 15 counties.
All right, let's see if we can work in a question that I just received on the Buckmaster Show email. Please ask Mr. Scott, and this comes from a listener, Mike, who's listening right now to the show, why taxpayers should pay for preschool education. At our house, Mike says, we paid for it privately by making it a part of our household budget, by making education a priority. No fancy cars, expensive vacations, or eating dinner out every night. Why is that so hard for others? There you go.
I think Mike's question is one that I can certainly relate to, because my wife and I are the parents of twins. And when they were preschool age, the cost for preschool was almost equal to our mortgage. But we had the means to pay for it. Did it mean that we had to cut some corners? Absolutely. But the families that we are talking about, Mike, the families who are at 200% of the federal poverty level or below, don't have that option. They are probably challenged to meet their costs for housing and health insurance. And so preschool education is something that is very likely not available to them. And the whole point of this measure is that all of our children should have this opportunity, and that family income should not be a barrier, because that is just another likely step for that child to remain in poverty instead of having the tools that education can provide to them.
All right. I have less than a minute. Was there any talk at the meeting, the Zoom meeting, about maybe going back in person, everybody wearing masks and socially distancing in the Pima County Board of Supervisors room again? Has that come up yet, Rex Scott?
Has not come up yet, no. Our next meeting is March 2nd, and like everything else, local conditions for the virus will dictate that decision.
All right, Rex Scott, thank you very much for spending part of your lunch hour with us. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Bill.
Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott, Democrat representing the District Number 1 on the 5-member Pima County Board of Supervisors. Today is the beginning of Lent. It's Ash Wednesday. Our faith and spirituality contributor is in the house. Father Robert is here. He'll be with me. We're going to talk about Ash Wednesday and some other faith-related items. If you would like to join the conversation, fine, 790-2040. Let's take the break. CBS Network News coming up in about 15 seconds. We'll be right back with you.
Reed Park Zoo is now open for wildlife walks, a modified guest experience, prioritizing social distancing and safety. To find out more about all the changes and the new safety precautions now in place, visit reedparkzoo.org. The community-approved 10-year master plan ensures that your zoo's future is brighter than ever before. We've missed you, and so have the animals. They're waiting to welcome you back to the Reed Park Zoo.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over 5 buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cunada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Our live line, courtesy of Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. I want to say a few words about Green Things. What a wonderful location they have over there on River Road, 3384 East River Road. 13 acres full of amazing plants. And they have Zocalo Village, which has some beautiful Talavera pottery, antiques, fine art, handmade furniture, lighting, home accessories, all sorts of beautiful things. Green Things, now in their 51st year. GreenThingsAZ.com is the website for the amazing plants and everything to do with the nursery. And then the Zocalo Village component is ZocaloVillage.com. Today is Ash Wednesday, and to help more people observe, it's a time of social distancing. Churches have come up with some really new and creative ways to mark the solemn occasion that's often associated with ashes applied to the believer's forehead in the shape of the cross. And it's been very interesting to see what some of the churches have been doing, including mailing out some ashes. So let's talk more about Ash Wednesday and other things with Father Robert Hendrickson, the rector at St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church, an iconic building on the northeast corner of River and Campbell. Father Robert, we are proud to say, is our Buckmaster Show contributor on faith and spirituality. How are you today, Father Robert?
I am well. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure. I guess you don't say happy Ash Wednesday, do you?
No, maybe a sort of blessed start to Lent or something.
Of course, it is the start of the Lenten season, and Lent is, let me see if I can recall this, 40 days, not including Sundays.
Exactly, because every Sunday is a feast day, a feast of the resurrection. So those are technically not included in the 40 days of Lent. So it's 46 calendar days, 40 days of actual sort of Lenten observance.
And this is one of the early starts.
This is an earlier start in the year, so which means Easter is earlier this year, which is nice.
And it's based on what? How is that determined?
So it has to do with lunar cycles. Yeah, it's a lunar calendar cycle. This is one of those things you learn in seminary and you promptly forget.
Until someone embarrasses you, and your
entire lineage is embarrassed from here on out. it's based on lunar cycles. As to how Easter when Easter is observed. But Lent itself is always that 40 days before.
So this has been a challenge for the faith community about how to, because Ash Wednesday is hands-on, it's the spiritual leader putting the ashes on the believer's forehead. And by the way, the ashes are from the palms from last Palm Sunday. Is that correct?
That is correct. So we burn the palms from the previous Palm Sunday. Become that. That's what makes up the ashes, plus a little bit of oil to help them stick on there and to not. What we've discovered through trial and error that if you put water with the ashes, it actually scrapes someone's forehead. So if you put a little oil, it stays on there and it's nice and smooth. But that's been the custom. Well, at least since it was common by the 10th century. I mean, basically, it was a pretty widespread 10th, 11th century. There are church records as early as the 2nd or 3rd century that talk about ashes being used in this way. So it's one of those sort of pieces of antiquity, those rituals that we sort of cognitively know are old. But I think at our deepest core being, when they happen, when we're part of them, we know we're touching something that goes far back.
Did St. Philip's in the Hills go with the mailing ashes route?
We did not mail them. We made packets that were available for people to pick up at the church.
Pick up, right.
So folks are at home able to watch the service online, and then there's a point at which we'll invite people to either impose ashes on themselves or on their family members.
So why do we have Ash Wednesday? And, of course, this marks the beginning of Lent, and do we need to give up something? Is that typically what believers do? They make a vow to maybe something that they really like, they give up for the Lenten period?
Yeah, there are a couple of different
avenues.
Yeah, a couple of different paths. I mean, one would be, so traditionally Lent, it's a season of fasting. And so the idea is with a fast, it's not, a fast is not that you give up something bad with the hope of picking it back up again in 40 days, right? So it's not like, I'm going to refrain from anger,
put
but in 40 days, I'm going to be all
on
mad
the sideline
again.
Like, yeah. For 40 days, I can do that.
So the idea is that it's this time of intentional sparseness in your life where you step away from some things that do bring joy in order to re-embrace them in a way that helps you appreciate them more actually when you get to the joy of Easter. So it might be so that's one way of looking at it. Another way that's similar is it's a time of repentance. It's a time when you're looking at those things in your life that create distance between you and God and from those you love. So it is a time to take stock of those things, but that's a slightly different thing. So in other words, like I said, if you're refraining from something that does harm to you or just those around you, that's not something you want to pick back up. But it is a time to do those things. And in part, it's both about appreciating the things that we love more and recognizing those things that are true about ourselves that we perhaps wish weren't true. And so it's a time for us to recall who we're made to be by God. And that in part, that's the reminder. Remember that you are dust and to dust you shall return. We're created by God. We are created as one with creation. But ultimately, the season is not one that is just, it is not a time where we sit and sort of just do sort of self-flagellation and beat ourselves up. You can do that. That's fun, but that's not what it's about. It's actually much more about the joy that we get from knowing that Christ returns on Easter Day. It's the joy that we get from knowing that we are united with God in a love that is indissoluble, and that all we can do as human creatures is respond to that love in as faithful a way as possible. And part of that is stepping away from the things that create distance from God and stepping toward those things that create that help us to be more fully who we're called to be.
How about humility?
Well, I don't practice that myself, though.
I mean, maybe that could be someone
absolutely
could say, well, for Lent, I'm going to try to practice humility
absolutely
a bit more.
I mean, you sort of,
maybe that would be appropriate.
Absolutely. And you look at any of the seven virtues, any of those virtues, that's another way of approaching Lent.
I won't ask you to recite the seven virtues at this point.
Thank you.
The spot there.
You're going to have to send me a list of things you're going to ask me beforehand.
I know.
But things like temperance, humility, all those sorts of things, where we look at those and perhaps looking at those virtues, we say, what could I do more of that would help me better live into those virtues, right? Or even the simple ones that are in Scripture, faith, hope, and love. How can I better live out my faith? How can I better demonstrate my love for those around me? How can I show my hope? Those are things. And so some folks will take on things during Lent where they'll want to sort of say, I'm going to do more of X or more of Y. And that might be something as simple as I'm going to reach out to family members I love more. It might be I'm going to do more acts of charity or something like that. But again, those aren't things you want to step away from when Lent is over. It's sort of like, around Thanksgiving and Christmas, everyone gets all excited about being generous and they forget the rest of the year. That we're not into sort of temporary charity. We want to sort of inculcate those things.
Or enhance your giving or something.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And there are ways, and that's part of the reason for the liturgical cycle, right? This happens year by year by year because the process of becoming Christian is a lifelong process. The process of becoming faithful, becoming spiritual, is not something that's just a flash in a pan thing that happens one time. The reason these cycles happen again and again and again is so that we can live more deeply year by year into the life and witness, in our case of Jesus, but in everyone's case, they're always sort of striving to live more deeply and more truly. And so that's part of why these annual observances are so important.
With so much death in the COVID year, an Ash Wednesday being in many ways showing that life is terminal. I mean, it's very appropriate this year for reflection today.
Well, and I don't think it's a coincidence that most of these sorts of devotions, like Ash Wednesday, like Corpus Christi, like seeing sort of the body of Jesus on crucifixes, so much of that developed during plague times. And I think that when you look at people facing the reality of death, I think that the idea that we worship and adore for Christians a Savior who died and who was held in the arms of a grieving mother has an immense poignancy. For myself, in many ways, I am a Christian because of Ash Wednesday. In my previous career, I was the communications director for a company in New York. Brooks Brothers.
Sure.
And when 9/11 happened, I was living in Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I remember standing there watching all that smoke and
sure.
ash come down the streets of Manhattan. And you fast forward to 2005, let me think about this, no, 2006, I was working on the communication staff of Trinity Church Wall Street, which is a big Episcopal church and right by the World Trade Center where it was. And I was asked to help impose ashes as part of the Ash Wednesday service. And so I went and I stood and, started. They said, well, you'll have a half an hour shift. So I did that for half an hour. Then the person who was supposed to show up and relieve me didn't show up. Then the next person didn't show up. And so I ended up imposing ashes for about 3.5 hours.
Hmm.
And I thought that minutes had passed by.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole time I was standing at the front of this huge church, looking out these open doors onto the streets of Manhattan, saying over and over again, remember that you are dust and to dust you shall return, as mm-hmm. those images of the dust and smoke
sure.
roaring down the streets of Manhattan came back to me.
Hmm.
And so something in that encounter with people, in that the reality of encountering death in that moment, in a place consecrated to the life of Christ and to all of us living a deeper, more true life, that all sort of brought it home for me that what I wanted to do was not just sort of learn about God in an academic way, but encounter God in those real, heartfelt, dust-to-dust moments that we all have.
All right, we're going to pause right here. It's the Buckmaster Show on this Ash Wednesday. We'll have more with Father Robert on the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. We'll be right back. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Hello, I'm Jeanette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Hi, this is Pam Krim. CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, this portion presented by our friends over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Through the years, our listeners have been going over there and supporting this beautiful area. We have sent so many listeners to that area, and we want to send a lot more. But right now, New Mexico, I guess, you know, they've kind of tampered down out-of-state visitors, but that will change, believe me. Hopefully in the coming weeks, people can once again pile in the car, take that three-hour drive over to from Tucson to a beautiful area of the Southwest, do some hiking in the Gila National Wilderness, and stay at some great places. For more information, you can start your planning right now. Where to stay and what to do, those questions answered at Southwest New Mexico, spelled out, .org. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios with Father Robert Hendrickson, rector at St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church. He is also the Buckmaster Show contributor on faith and spirituality. We've been talking about Ash Wednesday, and Father Robert, you were sharing with me that Zocalo Village, on the grounds of Green Things, was a wonderful place, a source for you to find a special Valentine's Day gift.
I did. I went and got a very large pottery cat that was beautiful, and it was a big hit. So thank you to the folks there for that.
There you go. And they have some beautiful pottery and Talavera pottery from Mexico. We were talking before the break about your transition, a little bit of your transition from being a top executive in New York City. Really, some would consider, Father Robert, a dream job. I mean, here you were, a young man, not that you're not young anymore, but as a young man, head of marketing for an iconic brand, Brooks Brothers, which has had some difficulty recent years. By the way, did they sell off the brand, or did somebody pick it up? Or
I don't know where they are right now. I'm not sure. I'm probably under some sort of NDA agreement,
yes,
or something about it.
We won't go there. But when you made that decision to leave retailing and then changing gears to go to either as an academic or an actual spiritual leader, what did your friends say about that? Did they say you got to be crazy?
They did. It's funny because I wasn't known as the most religious person for most of my life. In fact, when I lived in Mississippi and I had a bumper sticker on my car that said, if you want to live in a religious country, move to Iran. That was my, my take on religion was not terribly warm. And part
and
of that
you
was,
actually shared with us in one of our visits here that you were a non-believer.
Well, I was. Let me put it this way. I thought I was a non-believer.
Oh, okay.
You know, because when I was young, I had several losses. I lost my mother and my sister. Mm-hmm. So I thought I was a non-believer. What I realized, though, over time is that I was just very angry with God. It wasn't that I didn't believe. It's just I was mad at God, mm-hmm. which are two very different things. But I think most people had perceived, thought that I was just, complete heathen and had nothing, didn't want anything to do with religion. But what the challenging part about God is that God always calls us back even when we don't want that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was sort of drawn back in when I remembered later on when I was little, I got in trouble for stealing holy water to baptize stuffed animals in my house.
Oh, really?
So there was always some vocation there. But
Did you actually preach to them, do you recall, to some of the stuffed animals after you took the holy water?
I did, and they were riveted. I mean, they just
it must have been a really a captive audience, say the least. But getting back, friends were saying, why are you going down that particular path?
Yeah, and in part, when I was in seminary, I remember sitting around a table with about 10 people who all of us were in various stages of formation in seminary, and we got in the conversation about sort of life and whatever. And it turned out that 9 of the 10 people at that table had lost a parent when they were young, and so I think there's something about that encounter with significant loss that sort of opens you up to God moving in particular ways. And I think we experience that over our entire lives, right? There are those moments where suddenly we realize just how thin the veil is between the next world and this one. And so we get the opportunity is there for us to be sort of caught up by God, I think, in ways. And so that's what happened to me. I mean, the most helpful thing is we moved to a new place where there was neither a church that Carrie nor I wanted to attend, and we ended up finding the Episcopal Church as sort of a compromise, and that's where it became our home, and we fell in love with the church, and more importantly, fell in love with God again.
Did I hear you correctly was it at seminary that, did you say the majority of people you were talking to had lost a parent at a young age?
Correct. Yeah.
I've never heard that before.
Yeah, I had. You know, that was it was certainly a surprise to me. But we realized, you know, that 9 out of 10 was just that table. But
nine
it was
out of ten
at that table for breakfast table. But it's a very common experience for folks who are in ministry, so they've had some significant loss when they're younger.
Hmm. Why do you think then that would perhaps you would be drawn then to a life of spirituality in a chance to possibly reconnect with the loved one who had gone on?
I think in part it has to do with some people. I know it has to do with how they experienced those losses. I mean, many times it's because the church was there for them in the midst of those losses. I think it has something to do with, you know, this is a bit of a tangent, but bear with me. There's a Japanese pottery art called kintsugi, where you take a vessel, you know, a vase or something that's broken, and you fix it and repair it by filling all the seams with gold. And so you end up with this piece of pottery that has all these cracks, but they're all these gold cracks. And for me, that's sort of what the church does at our best. It takes people who are broken and seals them back up with a sort of spirit of love and compassion. And so people who have been repaired in that way, sort of brought back together, are uniquely called or uniquely tugged or pulled toward helping other people go through that same process of being brought back together again.
What are you thinking about now for Lent, as far as some kind of a personal sacrifice on your behalf? I've only got about 45 seconds.
Well, for me, it's what I'm trying to do is go return back to some things like doing more intentional reading of scripture for longer periods of time. There are things we would all like to be doing more of all the time, but for me, it's about sort of carving out some more intentional time around all those sorts of disciplines.
All right. We will have you back. Hopefully, we'll see you very soon toward the conclusion of the Lenten season as we look for kind of a rebirth that will be coming up on Easter in about a month and a half or so.
Absolutely. And it's not kind of a rebirth. It is one.
There you go. All right, Father Robert, good to see you.
Thank you.
Stay safe. Be well. Father Robert Hendrickson, rector at St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church. And by the way, a very robust virtual learning and spirituality going on at St. Philip's. Would you like to go ahead and give the website?
Sure. It's stphillipstucson.org. And there's all sorts of stuff happening, Bible studies, classes, worship, and all that.
Some interaction stuff, too, right?
All kinds of, we're on Zoom all the time, so...
Good deal. All right, that's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. Bill Buckmaster with you on behalf of Father Robert and Tom Fairbanks. Always doing Tom Tom does such a great job that we keep him on the other side of the glass. No, he does a great job in the control room. Have a great afternoon, everybody.